Here to tell us a little bit about the first year of the OpenStreetMap project.
Thank you. So my name is Steve Coast, and I run a thing called OpenStreetMap, which is pretty much what it says in the tin. It's a wiki map of the whole world. One quick way of looking at it is it's Wikipedia, but for maps. It's a project with about 2,000 users, mostly in Europe, not many in the States, for reasons that I'll explain in a minute. The reason it's been created is that, well, the first reason it was created is that data is not free. Map data in Europe is generally not free. We have these things called national mapping agencies, which tend to be government agencies which can also compete in the private sector. And they own all the mapping data. So there are many free, as in beer maps, as you probably know, like Google Maps, Yahoo Maps, and XYZ Maps. But they source their data in general from national mapping agencies or derivatives or thereof. There's an artificial scarcity, so that you can't do anything with the data. You can't do routing, you can't add to a map. If you notice your street is missing or it's got the wrong name, you can't edit that. Concurrently with that, the data is not current. If you look at a lot of maps, you'll find roads that have been built that aren't in the map because no one's gone out and surveyed it yet. Specifically in London, there's many of these things. And then even if all of that map data was free, like it is in the States, then a wiki is the next logical step to allow anyone to go in and edit it. So rather than paying lots of surveyors all over the place to go and map these things, just let the people do it for themselves. And to get an idea of what I'm talking about and how OpenStreetMap works, this is an animation of courier drivers driving through London. So it's actually made by Tom. And each of these things is a day. So there's 3 days here. And that's the time period which is being shown. And so you're seeing people drive around London, essentially. And you can aggregate all of that data together. You can also see interesting things like... I don't know if I can maybe go forward. No, go back. Back. Thank you. So... Once it gets to that day, I'll give you a running commentary. This is the river through here, Hyde Park, Queen's Park up there. So that's midnight. So people wake up and they start driving around. They drive around London, do deliveries. They break for lunch, which is afterwards. They drive around some more, and then they go to the pub, and then about closing time, they all go home. That's a little bit. And if you aggregate that, that's, I think, 2 weeks' worth of data. In London, because GPS is not perfect, all of these traces that these couriers are making are not exactly on top of each other. There is some variance. So what you get is this natural effect of the thicker the line, the more travel it is. And also, you can't really see it, but the light blue and the light red, are 2 different weeks' worth of data. And you can see that quite quickly, if you have enough people carrying GPS units, that you can build up something that resembles a map. There's no metadata here, it's not turned into vectors, it's not useful really as anything other than a piece of art, which we realised and made a piece of art. So if you take data like that to OpenStreetMap, the way you use it is you go to our website and it looks like that. That's the UK, obviously. There's 3 tabs up the top: view, edit, and traces. This is the view, so you can pan around. It's a slippy map that allows you to view the current state of the map. You can then edit that data and traces, which I'll come on to. So if you were to zoom in on something such as Amsterdam, last time I gave this talk was in Amsterdam. The Wi-Fi's been too flaky to see what's around here. You get something like that, so you get there's only a few roads there, but you can zoom in further. And then if you were to upload some traces, you go to the GPS traces page. This is listing traces only by me, unfortunately, but you get a little sparkline-ish graphic of what the trace looks like. You get to describe and tag your GPS traces. The traces are recorded on commodity GPS units like that, which are about 50 quid or so. You get them off the GPS unit, you turn them into something called GPX, which is an open XML format for sharing GPS traces, and you upload it to OpenStreetMap, where they're aggregated together with everyone else's GPS traces. If you zoom in, then you can get a bit more detail on what it looks like. And then if you wanted to go and edit that, then you get something that looks like this. The background imagery is called Landsat. That's about 15 meters per pixel, free data that's given away by NASA, satellite aerial photography. The yellow dots are GPS traces, which are not necessarily just one person's, but they could be multiple people's traces. So you could easily imagine that one person drove along that road and another one drove along there. And then this thing is an applet, which talks to the server, grabs the various bits of data and allows you to edit. So the sort of light greenish lines on top of the GPS traces are vectors that have been made collaboratively, again, not necessarily all just by one person. And then you can extract that vector data and make maps out of it, do routing and everything else. So this all seems a little bit flaky, but I just want to give you some quotes. First one, they're quite interesting people, so the person's hidden until the end. It's absolutely possible for a bunch of smart guys with the technology we have today to capture street networks and potentially the major roads of the UK and the minor roads. And that is a quote from Ed Parsons, who's Chief Technology Officer of the Ordnance Survey. Second one, if you don't make low-resolution mapping data publicly available, there will be people with their cars and GPS devices driving around with their laptops. They will be cataloguing every lane and enjoying it, driving 4x4s behind your farm at the dead of night. There will, if necessary, be a grassroots remapping. And that, interestingly, is Tim Berners-Lee a few months ago now, in the Guardian. And then the most interesting of all, you could have a community capability where you took the GPS data of people driving around and start to see, oh, there's a new road that we don't have, a new route, and so that data eventually should just come from the community with the right software infrastructure. And this is probably someone you're not expecting, that's Bill Gates saying that. And it's quite interesting because Microsoft's not traditionally a community company. So, you have that data. At the moment, our database is really big, it's a big number. We have an open API, which is buzzword compliant. It's RESTful. It's XML. It's our own XML format. And there's also a thing called planet.osa, which is a monthly dump of all of the data, or mostly all of it, as I'll describe in a minute. And then you can use this data for stuff. So this program is actually something that started OpenStreetMap and started the whole thing for me. It's called GPS Drive. It's a piece of software for Linux. You plug your GPS into your laptop and it will give you a map of where you are. Back in the day, before OpenStreetMap was started, it simply downloaded maps from Microsoft MapPoint and a couple of other places. And so if you wanted to drive somewhere because you were offline, what you do is, at home before you drove, you plug your laptop into the internet and pretend to drive somewhere, and it would grab lots of images of map along your route, because it didn't just automatically download the entire planet onto this thing. And then when you drove somewhere, it would replay the correct image for roughly where you were and roughly the right zoom level. And that's a bit frustrating because it can't route you, because they're just pictures, there's no metadata attached to that. And also you had to do this thing of grabbing the correct pictures before you went anywhere, which is a little bit annoying. So what they've done is they've imported OpenStreetMap data, and this is an early screenshot of this is actual OpenStreetMap data. Without much tagging, unfortunately. There's the old parking mark there and stuff like that. But you can do routing with that, which is what they're working on. Similarly, there's a piece of software called Flight Gear, which is a flight simulator, which is actually really cool and works on Macs and everything. And they built this flight simulator, but then sort of don't have any scenery data. So they're using OpenStreetMap. Well, one guy imported OpenStreetMap's data, and that's London, believe it or not. Because pilots actually do use roads when they're flying visual flight rules to follow motorways between places and so on. You can also use our GPSs on traditional devices. So these are based on traditional devices for GPS units. That thing up there is a GPS, and you can see the OpenStreetMap vector data is also on the screen. It's the same thing. And that particular device can also route you using that stuff. It uses a standard format for exchanging data with the GPS itself. It's not. We do have pretty maps. We're getting there. We're still sort of in our early stages as a project. So it's not just white lines on top of sort of blurry satellite photography. It was in the beginning, and this is sort of what you see at the moment. And then a guy in the UK has been working on SVG rendering. So I just want to sort of show you the progression of how our maps have been improving with time. They're getting to the point where they're actually sort of really feasible stuff. And as the, I'm not sure how clear that is on there, but as the rendering has been improving, you can also see a sort of progression in the size of the map data here. So if we go all the way back to the beginning, there is very little. And then as the guy's been adding, been cycling and walking around his area, adding more vector data, he's also been improving the quality, the visual quality of the map, to the point where in this one,
even getting the street names put in automatically along the lines, which is a handy feature of SVG, which does that automatically.
So we can print pretty stuff. As this is supposed to be about this year, I can talk a little bit about progress. What's the graphs move? It doesn't. We have a big stats page, which is the wiki's working. You can have a look at, which is wiki.openstreetmap.org. This is users and track points. I think everything has been ramping up a lot. We've had several big jumps. Whenever new features are added, we get a bit of a jump in users and jump in usability and so on. It really doesn't matter what the graph, what the y-axis shows. Just with time, everything's just been taking off. Specifically, I don't know how many man years it is, but we have, I think it's over 21 million GPS points now, where the GPS point is typically taken once every second or a couple of seconds. So it gives you some idea of the amount of time and effort people are putting into going out and creating traces and then turning those into vectors. Along with the progress we've made in number of users, we've had to sort of try and make some progress with our servers. And this pretty nicely describes the progress we've made with our servers. They used to run on donated hardware at a university under someone's desk, and we recently got donated some computers, which you can see there, with racks and so on that are very pretty and now actually serve content a little bit faster. But it's a bit of a problem because as soon as we had faster computers, people seemed to be able to make them slower just as quickly as we put them in. This is an animation, which hopefully is running.
Yeah. Oh, progress in London. This one, I think this goes up to about January. So you've got the date running along the top of the screen, and you can see how patchy it is for a start, and also how the map suddenly explodes. This is the M25, the London Orbital motorway around the side. And it's still missing some stuff. You can see how things got a lot quicker towards the end of last year as people went out. Of course, with every white segment you're seeing here, someone had to go out and cycle or drive with their GPS, upload the data, and then turn that into vectors. So there's quite a lot of work involved. And you can see that, for example, up in Finchley, up in the north of London there, those areas that are highly mapped are highly mapped simply because there's people willing to go and do all of that work all the time. So there's no one down here mapping. It's a good way of seeing it. Similarly with the UK, just to give it a slightly bigger perspective. Is the animation dry?
Good.
There are people all over the UK. We recently mapped all of the motorways on the UK, which have sort of seen taken off in a minute. So that's sort of England's second city, Birmingham, and all the motorways and bits of models and stuff. There is similar animations available for bits of Europe.
Shame, progress there. We've also been importing something called Tiger Line. This is section 105 of the United States Code, which basically says that the government isn't allowed to own copyright on anything it produces. You can transfer copyright to it, you can give the US government the work, and then they can own the copyright, but they can't do it on anything they create from scratch. And that's really useful because the Census Bureau in the US every N years maps most of the US, but it doesn't do it particularly well. You'll often hear a lot of complaints about it. And that data, the maps they created the whole US, is called Tiger Line. and it's available for free from census.gov, and it forms the basis of almost all the maps in the states, which are then augmented with surveyors adding in details, adding bridge loadings and so on, because tagline, the Census Bureau only does the amount of work absolutely necessary to get them to get their job done, which is the census. They're not supposed to be mapping, really. And if you import it, this is approximately what it looks like. It's not very pretty because it's a US city, so it's just a grid. But this happens to be San Francisco. This is a Presidio here and stuff. And we've been importing that at the rate of, I don't know, I think it's 30,000 segments a day or something like that. So it will take some time to get the whole of the US, but it's an interesting story why it happened. We actually imported some of Tiger, some of New York a long time ago, and because there's no one who popped up on the mailing list really from the United States who's mapping, is actively going out, we sort of assumed that there was no one out there mapping. And then a little while ago I just happened to randomly have a look at some places in the US and was a bit scared to discover that people are driving around in the US and adding maps from the ground up, despite there being Tiger Line available. So it was a quick thing to try and get that started and get it imported. As the communities got bigger, it seemed that a good idea for, at the very least, some kind of conference or workshop and everyone meet up at OpenStreetMap. So we organised this thing in a place called the Isle of Wight, which a lot of international audiences have never heard of. It's that place, that little isle there. I can't remember its dimensions. It's like 15 by 30 miles across. And we had a workshop there only a few weeks ago. It seems like years ago. And where we hired several cottages, and we had 30 or 40 people from the OpenStreetMap community come down, and we mapped the entire thing. Whilst drinking and talking about GPSs. This is the kind of map that was available before we went. This is Ordnance Survey map from 1943, I think. And in the UK, Crown copyright, which is what our government agencies own, expires after 50 years. So we can use this map because it's over 50 years old. Of course, these maps exist for the whole of the UK, but they tend to miss out major things like the M25 or big towns like Milton Keynes or Heathrow, because they weren't there in the pre or just post-war era. All that building boom happened over the next 20 or 30 years. So this was what was available before, and this is what we managed to produce after one day of wandering around. These are the aggregated GPS traces of all the people who were there for the first day of the workshop. They're mostly coloured differently, but some traces share colours. So you can see that there are some very dense areas, like the central areas called Newport, and Ryde is the thing, the northeast up there. And then there's an awful lot of country lanes. What we aimed to do was map all of the roads on the Isle of Wight. There's 15 billion miles of footpaths and bridleways and so on. It would have sort of been impossible to do that with the number of people we had. And I think we mostly got there. This screenshot is slightly old, but this is what we've produced so far. And this is vector data. So once we've got all of those GPS traces, you have to come back and correlate them with any photos of road signs you've taken, or if you've taken a dictaphone and you've given a running commentary on where you've been, then you've got to turn all of that data into a map. And that's what the Isle of Wight looked as of a few weeks ago. We did a similar thing in Manchester, and that's the centre of Manchester. Manchester is the third city in England or something like that. It was a very different experience to the Isle of Wight. The Isle of Wight was a lot of hardcore OpenStreetMap people who owned their own GPSs. And we're quite prepared to cycle around in the rain for 2 or 3 days, if not more, and knew what they were doing. And also, because the Isle of Wight doesn't have many high-rise buildings, GPS reception was excellent, which is why we've got such good maps. Now, by contrast, Manchester, or Mapchester, as it was for that weekend, has many high-rise buildings, and commodity GPSs like this just fall apart if you... if you're in a building like this, just a little bit higher without a roof, obviously, because you can't see enough satellites, which is why these traces are somewhat more scattered. We managed to get everything, almost everything, in the inner ring road, and that was through a lot of advertising. We were in the press and stuff, and people just turned up and just wanted to map, and so we found GPS units, gave them a little tutorial about how to hold them, don't put them in your pocket because you can't receive signals if they're in your pocket, take photographs of everything and so on, and sort of push them out onto the street to wander around Manchester and then come back with their data, which has been aggregated and is currently being built. That was only 2 weeks ago, I think it was. I don't know why that's there. Oh, yes, I do. Right. The Isle of Man, as another example, is a crown dependency. It's not actually part of the United Kingdom, but it's that thing in the yellow circle. There's no mapping data. If you go to Google Maps or Yahoo Maps or basically any mapping site, it's hard to find mapping data of the Isle of Man because of strange license restrictions. But if you go to OpenStreetMap, there is, because we have three or four contributors from the Isle of Man. At least two of them still live there. So it's kind of interesting that we can not only just replicate what's already being done, but also do new stuff that is totally unavailable at the moment. And that would be a lot more applicable in somewhere like Africa or developing countries where there aren't any maps, where hopefully we can create our own. Now, in OpenStreetMap's growth, very recently there's been quite a bit of fallout because of the Isle of Wight and hitting a lot more of the mainstream users and people out there who would like to map. And one of the cool things that happened, this is a road called Lye Close, which is on A to Z maps in Bristol in England. And it's supposed to go through the middle of those Georgian buildings there. But obviously there's no road there. It's an Easter egg that's been put there by the map, by the mapping company A to Z, so that if you copy their map, they know it was you, because otherwise you wouldn't have that stupid error in there. And mapping companies put lots of Easter eggs in their maps. They put kinks in roads, they put churches, church symbols in there that aren't actually there, that kind of stuff. Stuff that's not actually going to kill you, but if you read it wrong, you're not going to drive off a cliff or something, but allows them to assert their copyright. And this was picked up in a Guardian article a while ago about the Isle of Wight workshop we did. And it's great because Norman Dennison, director of Geographers A to Z Map Company, confirms that Lye Close is a lie, which will now be removed. So we managed to get this company to remove their crappy data, which they're trying to give you, which I think is quite a powerful thing. And because people are... I mean, Lye Close is quite a famous one, apparently, if you live in Bristol. But because people are mapping exhaustively in OpenStreetMap and they're going around every single little road and then sometimes comparing that to existing maps, they're getting to find all of these little errors exhaustively and documenting them. If you go to there's a copyright Easter eggs page on our wiki, you'll find a big list of all of the fake streets and stuff in there. This is a quote in the Guardian from the Ordnance Survey in response to us mapping all the Isle of Wight. And it says, "We make an average of 5,000 changes to our large-scale data every day," said NOAA spokesperson. "It's not about mapping the Isle of Wight once, it's about continuing to map it. It is expensive to collect detailed, accurate information on the ever-changing world to the level of detail our customers require." And sort of quite tongue-in-cheek, a guy called Etienne on the mailing list who did the SVG stuff rewrote it from an OpenStreetMap perspective, saying, "This month we've made an average of 6,500 changes to our large-scale data every workday." It's not about mapping the Isle of Wight once, it's about continuing to map it, and using enthusiastic and passionate volunteer surveyors, we are collecting more information every day with 1,864 registered volunteers. I think it's over 2,100 now. Which is we have more volunteers than the Ordnance Survey has paid employees, and I think that's another, although slightly tongue-in-cheek, it's a very powerful meme to throw back. This is somewhat more boring. Postcodes in the UK, I don't know much of the policy in the rest of the Europe, are owned by the Royal Mail. So this which is just the latitude, longitude, and then the outer and inner parts of the postcode, that big database. In the UK, we have about a postcode every 3 or 4 houses. So it's very, very fine-grained. And that is used for all sorts of things, not least of which routing mail and routing deliveries and so on. But also geographic boundaries, like voting boundaries, are based on postcodes and so on. They're used for a whole ton of stuff. And that data is similarly constrained. It's very expensive to get that data. It's expensive to use it, redistribute it, or print anything pretty with it. And so we run a thing called Free the Postcode, which is just a very simple web form to allow you to upload the first and second part and the latitude and longitude so that we can build a postcode database. It was sort of a low-hanging fruit thing that really should be integrated into OpenStreetMap when it's ready. But I'm standing here talking to you rather than coding on it at the moment. So I've allowed quite a bit of time for discussion. Rather than just sort of repeat everything a few times. So thank you for listening. And I hope that helps.
Thank you very much. Pass this around for questions.
It's intriguing that the original A to Z was just done by one lady, wasn't it?
That was Central London, yeah.
One average person can do an awful lot.
Yeah. And that was pre-GPS, so it was a lot harder.
I was wondering, as it's a community project and you have over 2,000 community members now, what do you think motivates the people? Do you do anything apart from that workshop to keep the people going, to maintain the standards of the work and the quality of the work?
Specifically on motivation, it's a very wide range of stuff. We have people who simply want a map because, you know, it's a cool thing to do, to wander around. We have people who want it because they want to overlay all kinds of interesting data. Like, for example, and this all stems from map data is expensive or you know, hard to obtain. So people who, for example, a guy called Christian Knowles, who goes around and does a thing called biomapping, where you wander around with a GPS while you hold a galvanic skin response unit, which measures your stress level. And then you can plot that data, aggregate it over lots of people, and then you see very subtle things like people are less stressed if they're walking through a park, but more stressed if they're crossing a motorway. And then you can aggregate that stuff and get an emotional map of somewhere. But he doesn't have any map data to plot his maps on top, because that's Ordnance Survey expensive data. People who just want to, genealogy, for example, what the map looked like in the past, where my granddad lived, that kind of thing. Again, licensing the map data is really expensive, so it's extremely diverse, the reasons. As for the quality, because we're relatively small and it's relatively early in the project, we don't have that problem. OpenStreetMap's very much been about tackling problems as we get to them, and we haven't had anyone, this is not an invitation, try and wreck the database yet. We haven't had, to my knowledge, any spam in it, for example. We haven't had anyone deliberately just trying to delete millions of streets and so on. There are processes that are very similar to Wikipedia to stop against that, and the many eyeballs concept and having RSS feeds and so on.
So, this may be totally wrong, I don't know, I'm good and well enough to know, but it looked from your London coverage map as if there was a correlation between income and quality, which is kind of funny when you're trying to open this stuff up, so all the rich people get free mansions if they're actually mapping stuff. Is that?
That's interesting. I want to have a look at it myself and see what you mean. Certainly, I mean, I was about to say, certainly there's a big divide between north and south of the river. So I should go back, thank you. So that one, I suppose, is what you meant.
No, you have the
animation.
You
okay.
See all the centre of London getting done first, and then neighbourhoods.
Sure, well, I can use this graph to make the same point, because most of the central London was based off of this data, because early on we didn't have many people in London going around mapping. So specifically with this, I suppose it reflects the economy of London simply because they're couriers. So you know, they're only delivering to other companies and so on, and most of the companies are where you see it. And then you're absolutely right, because there were, if I can just make this go back to London, apart from that, there were patches where people have been exhaustively mapping, such as Finchley. I'm going to give up. Yeah, but it's absolutely a good point. Not so bad.
First, let me just say that I think this is absolutely amazing. You're doing great service to humanity, so thank you. But just an anecdote, I'm from Canada, but I work with U.S. clients on projects, GIS projects that span the U.S.-Canada border. And the only place we can get information about geographic place location data for Canada is from the U.S. military's free and open database. So,
have you seen GeoNames?
I have seen GeoNames, yes. But we can't, they won't dump us the data.
Yeah.
We can search it, but not use it. One thing that's good in Canada, we share the same crown, and we share the same sort of concept of crown copyright, so suffer from many of the same things. But there is an opening up in Canada that we're starting, since there's a national road network which is going to be publicly released, which is encouraging. But to a question, I'm just wondering what you're using on the back end in terms of a tool set, whether your development tools and your map navigation tools and that sort of thing are open source and available for other projects.
Oh yeah, absolutely. All of the data is licensed Creative Commons. All of the software is GPL. In terms of the big, you know, the big bits of the jigsaw, that would be Apache, Ruby, and MySQL. And then an awful lot of code to make it all work, and very big SQL queries, because we store the history of all of these. The OpenStreetMap data is built up from nodes and then segments, and then you join multiple segments to create a thing called a way, which is a street. Right? And there's a lot of SQL behind the scenes to store all of the history and let you get at the data. There's the Java applet, as you saw. I don't think I showed a screenshot of, well, I did actually, but it doesn't matter, JOSM. That's a heavy client, if you like, which is written in Java. I think that covers it. Rendering is all proprietary stuff, again. I mean, not for, you know, proprietary as in we did it ourselves. Again, it's all open source. The rendering you see at the moment, it still looks like that, because several people are working on different ways to show pretty nice maps. We're sort of limited in terms of the amount of hardware we have. So that makes pre-rendering lots of tiles a hard problem. But we can almost get to the sort of SVG maps that you saw. This is really slow, just to press on. The ones you saw here, it shouldn't be too long before the maps you see on the website look something like this. They look a lot nicer with street names on them and colours and everything.
I'd like to ask you a more principal question. I agree with the super coolness and the great service you're doing to humanity, but the quality issue, I think, is pretty important for the future of your project or your perspectives here. I guess the next thing would be open phone directory or open email directory.
People have tried those, they don't work.
No, but the point is you're doing something that's actually working right now. But the quality fluctuation is going to be a problem in the application of your... of the community principle down the line. How do you feel about the issue that for certain uses, even everyday uses, people will still have to rely on what you see as evil, which is the commercial institutions? I mean, because your data will change over time. You know, Jimmy Wales is saying this is information is good enough, it might not be perfect, but it's okay, more or less.
Yeah, sure. Well, the central point is you either believe in the Wikipedia model or you don't. Right, so we're going to face the same fundamental problems as Wikipedia has, and you know, everything maps. First of all, well, people say Britannica is more authoritative. Well, it wasn't. It doesn't have as many articles, and there's lots of bugs. The same thing with maps, like I've shown you. They even put purposeful errors in. So the map data from commercial vendors probably isn't as good as you quite think it is, and they're only doing what we are doing. They're wandering around, right? They just employ people in big yellow cars with more expensive GPS units. It's fundamentally, it's not that different. And again, to come back to the point I sort of made a bit earlier, which is we're crossing these barriers as we're getting to them. We haven't had anyone yet who wants to go out and try and wreck the data or add just bad quality stuff. If anything, I mean, the worst data we get is simply because GPS reception and built-up errors is not very good. So you can get data that you walk down a street, but actually your entire track is like 20 metres north or south of where you think it should be. It will be fun, I think, to tackle those problems.
All right, one last brief question.
Based off the last question, what would it take, or what would it take in your mind to make this authoritative? Where authorities like the border passport control would say, hey, okay, you're going to this address according to this map, or...
Oh, government sanctioned, would you mean, or what?
Yeah, just to become authoritative, where it can be used, this mapping can be used as authoritative.
Well, it just needs to get bigger, I suppose. I mean, there has to be some tipping point. There must have been some point with Wikipedia where most of the people relied on it. I mean, I rely on Wikipedia for everything. Probably shouldn't, right? Because it could have changed, but most people do. So I think it's purely the sheer amount of data you have. Like, we have, as you've seen, like this, very complete maps of certain obscure places in Britain, but we don't have the entire map of the UK. Other than the same things that would happen with Wikipedia, you know, like the most contested article in Wikipedia is Jesus. So maybe there'll be something like that in well, yeah, okay, you've already seen that, like whether Taiwan is part of China or not, whether Tibet is part of China or not. So yes, I guess you could see those kind of issues, but I don't foresee them like within London or Europe. Sorry? Yes. Does it exist? No. Cool.
Maybe so. So, I think that covers this up.
Thank you.
Good speech. Good pass. And there's a whole lot of choices now, so we're just going to make a quick tour. In the big room, there is 4 demos, as you can see in the program. Underscore, Co-Comment, Gimli, and the Pirate Bay. In here, it's a little bit different than what it says in the program. We have prototyping first, we don't have the next one, we have the groups, and then last...
One second. Sorry, there's a lot of stuff loaded on there. It'll take a second to wake up. Yeah.
Without text, yeah, I mean, that's the argument there.
I don't know how to tell you.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Okay.
Stop.